I must admit, it was all quietly terrifying until, of course, you actually meet them. I knew that he would be incredibly intelligent and serious and thoughtful, but what I wasn't expecting was him to be fun and quite twinkly as well.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Country Life podcast with me, your host, James Fisher. I have an extremely amazing guest for you all this week. My favourite colleague, the brains behind the entire operation at Country Life. She's the managing editor, she's the features editor. Welcome, Paula. How are you today?
I'm extremely well, thank you, James. What an intro. And I'd just like to say that you are my favourite colleague too.
Oh, it's very kind. Thank you so much. Paula, you've been at the magazine how many years, if you don't mind me asking?
For 10 years.
Goodness, that's even longer than me, amazingly. And how long have you been running the features desk?
Yep, since then I started doing maternity cover for the former features editor, the lovely Flora Howard, actually back in 2013.
Oh my goodness. And what's it like running the Country Life features desk? What makes it so special?
Well, from the outset, I have to say it's the best job in the entire world. But I guess I would say that, wouldn't I? But now I think I'm extremely fortunate to work for such a respected weekly magazine that's been published every week for more than 125 years. And basically, it just never stops. I work with a great team, two extremely talented women.
Mm-hmm.
We've got Victoria Marston, our deputy features editor, who was once a sub-editor on the magazine, and nothing gets past Victoria. I think she is one of the world's best editors and proofreaders. And in fact, we all joke, don't we, that she her green pen is famous.
Yeah, it is. Ruthless.
And then I also have Agnes Stamp, who is our newest recruit, who is a ninja when it comes to admin and, yeah, keen as mustard and very quick brain. So the three of us, basically every week, we're trying to come up with ideas that are going to get past our esteemed editor Mark Hedges, because
mm-hmm.
nothing goes in the magazine without his express approval. And also, to be honest, we have lots of super talented freelance writers who are constantly pitching ideas. So it's a question of sifting through everything, and then we have a meeting with Mark. We run it past him. It's all completely terrifying. It's almost uh-huh. like a job interview every other week, and then he decides whether it's a yes or a no, and then we get down to the nitty-gritty. We start thinking about how many pages that article might cover, how many words we want, who we want people to speak to. We send a very full brief. We're quite bossy.
Uh-huh.
But I think readers will, hopefully appreciate the effort we go to try to make sure that each and every article is as interesting and accurate and eye-catching as it possibly can be.
And it's quite the job. I mean, I think Mark will also probably challenge you on having the best job in the world, because I think that's what he told us all the way back in episode one. When I'm often out and about, you know, people ask where I work, I say, oh, Country Life. And they go, wow, you know, for a monthly, you guys put together so much stuff. And I don't have to remind them that it's not, in fact, a monthly magazine. It's a weekly magazine, which I think just pays testament to the sheer size of the thing, and B, sort of the varied nature of a lot of the articles in it. So to hear that it's three people putting together all of this stuff every week, I mean, it must keep you pretty busy.
Oh, for sure, James. And I actually, having worked on a monthly briefly, I can say that I much prefer the rhythm of a weekly magazine.
Mm.
We go to press every Friday lunchtime without fail, which certainly keeps you on your toes. And also, we try to be pretty organised. Anybody who knows me will know this is that's not entirely unsurprising, because we need to have a few features or articles in the bank, and that's certainly something that Mark has taught us. that we commission all sorts of pieces that can just wait for the appropriate time to run.
Yeah.
So it's almost like stoking an engine, and we've always got staff waiting in the wings, and we spend a lot of time perfecting things as well, so that they're utterly brilliant, really.
Yeah, I think our readers would generally agree with that. They seem to like us. So let's strip back to first principle. How do you guys come up with your ideas on the features desk? Is it a mix of your own ideas that you then send out to writers, or is it more people, writers pitching in and you select the best ones? How does it all work?
So I guess it's half and half, really. I mean, I could walk out of my door. I'm extremely lucky. I live in a sweet little thatched cottage in the middle of the Dorset countryside. So,
well, I mean, it's country life. Where else would you be?
So I can stroll out of the door with my Labradors, and it may be that I remember once I had an idea about the sort of colours of the countryside. What is it that people really appreciate? So at the moment, now that all the hedges and the trees are just sort of bursting into life, and you know, you've got that really sharp acid green of the leaves, and you've got bluebells, and so I thought I could commission a writer to talk to various country life favorites, if you like, about the colors that mean something to them, and that turned into a really nice feature. And then Victoria, a couple of months ago, had an excellent idea about doing dogs, the most popular dogs through the decades. And she actually wrote that one herself. And that was a massive success. And, Ben, one of our brilliant designers, came up with a great cover design for it as well. And that just flew off the shelves. But then, as you say, we've also got these writers some of whom we have worked with for years and years, such as the incomparable Matthew Dennison, Jonathan Self, and they know what we're after. So they will send ideas, and we say, yes, right, we want 1,200 words by this time. But then on the other hand, we have lots of new writers as well. So, you know, if you pitch an idea to us, you will live or die on the strength of your idea, really. So it's open to anyone.
Yeah, and I think that's important. You know, it's having that mix of voices that people already know and love, but also providing opportunities for younger, less established writers to, you know, get their names in a large weekly glossy magazine. You know, I remember seeing my byline in Country Life for the first time, and it was very exciting. Can't remember what it was. Something about snails, maybe. Who knows?
Yeah, I think it was. I think, you know, you went to the snail racing championships for us, didn't you?
Yeah, something like that.
And a very nice and entertaining piece it was, James. But,
well, I mean, it practically wrote itself. You know, when you read the words Norfolk Snail Racing and World Championship, you just got to go and have a look at it, really.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And, I mean, before I got this job, I was a freelance writer for 15 years, and I was doing articles for all sorts of sort of country titles, you know, from Country Life to The Field to Shooting Times. But as you say, the thrill of seeing your name in light in our magazine never leaves you, because it's such a prestigious title read by such discerning, clever readers that, you know, you've really got to be at the top of your game to keep people engaged with what you're producing.
Absolutely. So considering there are, you know, 51 issues a year and every year, how do you sort of keep the stock of ideas fresh? You know, how do you sort of feel that you're doing, I don't know, new stuff every week, every year? Because it can almost, you almost feel like surely we've run out of stuff to write about by now.
You could say that. And also because we've been publishing for so long, I mean, 125 years is pretty epic, isn't it? There aren't many subjects that we won't have covered before in some way, but I guess that's part of the skill, is that we are always looking for a slightly different angle on a typically Country Life topic. And the other thing as well is, although we are Country Life, I think about 30% of our readers live in London and actually sort of aspire to that lifestyle. So That's one thing about working on the features desk. It's so eclectic with such a wide range of topics that we can go for. I mean, some of my most favourite features have been when once we did sort of like the day in the life of a cowpat. And commissioned a brilliant illustration of all the sort of wildlife that actually thrives on a cowpat. Just loved that feature. But then we could sort of segue into something like vicars who have dogs and take their dogs to work with them in the church every day. So in some ways it's sort of brilliantly bonkers, and that's why why I love it so much.
Yeah, you're not reading about cowpats and, you know, dog walking vicars in the Financial Times weekend, are you? That's sure.
No. So it's a constant roller coaster, and as you can imagine, so we spend a lot of time trying to come up with ideas and then actually commissioning writers, and we are quite bossy and very clear about what we want. So we send a full written brief, and when the article comes in, if it's not quite right, then I'm afraid respectfully kindly it is sent back to the writer, and we say, could you just speak to this person, could you do a little bit more on this, what did you mean about that? So by the time the reader sees that article in print, not only has it sort of been past several eyes, if you like, so Victoria will read it, I will read it, Agnes will read it, it then gets checked by our fabulous subbing team, our chief sub Octavia and our senior sub Stuart, and as I say, it's really important to us that everything is completely accurate. And then we work very closely with our picture desk, Lucy, Emily, Emma. Hours are spent trawling, looking for the very best pictures or commissioning illustrations. And then we have a meeting every week with our art team, the designers, who again will sometimes an article could be redesigned 3, 4, 5, 6 times. And then of course it needs to get past the all seeing eye of the great man, our editor in chief, Mark Hedges. And there's immense quality control. So sometimes I laugh because my dear dad, who is a retired gamekeeper, sometimes he says to me, "Now, Paula, what have you done in the magazine this week?" Because, I mean, sometimes I write stuff, but mostly I'm quietly behind the scenes producing things. And I would say, "Well, Dad, actually, we worked on about 10 of those pieces, but you won't necessarily see what we've done."
Yeah.
And that is part of our craft, and we're really proud of that.
As you should be. I mean, that's just one feature, and how many roughly go in the magazine each week? 3 or 4?
Do you know what? I think it's going up. I think it's more like 6, 7, 8. When I first joined, it was 1 or 2 general features or articles every week, and it's grown, and this is another thing that Mark has done, I think, to kick the magazine up another gear, because when it started, it was designed as an architectural magazine of record with historic gardens as well, and that's still the bedrock of it, along with all the fabulous property advertising at the front and all the property content that is masterminded by our news and property editor, Annunciata, as you once did for a while, James, as well.
Yeah.
So you know how that goes. But one of Mark's masterstrokes was to actually introduce these more general articles, the colour, if you like, between the more serious and sort of learned pieces, and I think that's what makes it such a top job, because basically we get to do the fun stuff.
Yeah, no, it is definitely the fun stuff. So, Paula, you spoke about cowpats and vicars with dogs. Are there any other features during your time at Country Life that you're particularly proud of? Something that you thought, wow, I can't believe we got this writer or we got this idea down in print?
Oh, there's so many. But I do have a favourite from recent weeks when Julian Lloyd Webber contacted us.
Listen.
Just out of the blue. And this is peak Country Life.
Yeah.
He wanted to write an article about a cellist called Beatrice Harrison, who back in the 1930s ended up doing a duet with a nightingale. It's absolutely mad, but utterly brilliant. And we really enjoyed putting that one together. And I felt very proud of the way that turned out. And also really cool that someone of Julian's standing and his caliber would get in touch and want to write for us. But to be honest, that kind of thing happens all the time.
Any other famous names who've written into magazines saying, hey, I'd love to be a part of it?
Well, yeah, actually, royalty, in fact. During my 10 years at the magazine, we've done quite a few royal guest edit issues, and I would say we've become pretty good at them. We kicked it off in 2013 when our editor Mark Hedges persuaded the King to do a guest edit issue on the occasion of his 65th birthday, and that sold like hotcakes. And then in 2018 he did it again to mark his 70th, and I would say that those issues have been a massive career highlight for me because as features editor, I was tasked with coordinating them, which was not without its challenges, as I'm sure you can imagine. I have probably sent the last one we did, which was with our Queen, Camilla, in 2022. I sent upwards of 2,000 emails back and forth to a small team at Clarence House, as it was then, and they're obviously now at Buckingham Palace.
Mm-hmm.
But they were incredible issues to work on. God, I'm sorry. I knew the postman. I knew it. Thank you, Nimrod. Right. That's enough. Yeah, you've seen him off. He's gone. You're so clever. Sit down. Oh, for God's sake. Right. Sorry, kids. We've got to do that again.
So it's all right. So you were saying upwards of, was it 2,000 emails?
Yes, I exchanged more than 2,000 emails with a small press team at Clarence House to get this issue done. But I would say it's been my biggest career highlight. So we've done those two guest edits with the King, which were absolute bestsellers. We then did one during lockdown with our Princess Royal in 2020. But the one with Queen Camilla in 2022, I think, pushed boundaries beyond what we've ever done at Country Life. Because, yes, she is renowned for being a great countrywoman. She always has been. She's loved hunting. She loves horses. She loves dogs. So we were expecting all of those things. But she also was very particular about commissioning articles on much different topics. So one of the pieces was on the Ebony Horse Club, which is a charity in South London which endeavours to get youngsters, inner city children, into horses and racing, and is incredibly successful in that. But also the best bit for me personally was an article that she asked me to commission on domestic violence in the countryside, which is not a topic that we have tackled in Country Life before, but is something that the Queen is really keen to try to keep tackling and to try to solve. So I got one of our very best freelance writers, Jane Wheatley, to write an article about... It's a very small charity, actually, called the Wiltshire Bobby Van Trust.
Yeah.
And it is a group of people who go around and basically fix up women's houses if their partner has you know, bash the door down or,
yeah,
you know, so it's just one of those charities that's working very quietly behind the scenes that the Queen is shining a light on to, you know, to bring this problem into focus. And yeah, what a great thing for us to be able to talk about in Country Life. And I was very touched to receive some private messages from women thanking us for bringing this into, you know, to the forefront and to talk about it, because it's really important that we talk about it and that we don't brush it under the carpet.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think as a magazine that titles itself as the voice of the countryside, it was a particularly moving feature that, you know, deals with, you know, it's not all just, you know, lovely gardens and wonderful houses and peacocks and isn't everything wonderful. There's always dark edge to the countryside, and you know, it's important to shine a light on that side of things as much as all the good stuff, I think.
Yeah, and in all seriousness, although obviously a lot of the features that we do are fun and colourful and entertaining, we don't shy away from difficult subjects either. We've also talked about TB, badgers, cattle, you know, issues that do affect our readers and the people who run the countryside and who love it and care about it.
So what was it like having the King and then the Queen as bosses for those issues? How does the then Prince of Wales proofread a page?
Well, I must admit, it was all quietly terrifying until, yeah, of course, you actually meet them. Because obviously their team is incredibly careful and cautious. But when we actually met the King,
yeah,
so Mark and I have met him several times during the course of making these magazines, I knew that he would be incredibly intelligent and serious and thoughtful. But what I wasn't expecting was him to be fun and quite twinkly as well. And he has just the biggest grasp of every subject name. He totally gets the countryside and is always trying, I think even now, to work behind the scenes to bring everyone together to solve issues. And yeah, I don't think there's anything that he doesn't understand about flora and fauna. And of course it was very interesting to work with him and to see that, you know, many years ago he was dismissed as a bit of a crank and a tree hugger for talking about the environment and global warming and lots of things that are now, of course, everyone has caught up with. So yes, it was quite scary laying out all these proofs before him, but because we had very carefully taken his instruction all along the way, when we did finally show him the page proofs, I mean, really, he changed very little. I mean, yes, there was the odd picture here and there got tweaked, but he was actually very pleased with what we had produced.
Very good. So at the sort of beginning of the process, either he or for Camilla's guest edit, you know, they sort of send you a list of ideas of things they want you to focus on, and then you'll go out and basically bring those things to life. Is that the general idea?
Yes. And when so with the Queen, it was slightly different because she actually buttonholed Mark at a reception at Dumfries House. And she said to him, right, come on then, Mark, when are you going to let me have a go? She said, I really want to have a go at editing Country Life and I want to beat my husband. So Mark said, okay. And then we arranged a meeting down at Clarence House in London, and the Queen's son, Tom, who writes a regular recipe column, was there too. And we had quite a long discussion about the charities that she wanted to feature, the articles that she wanted to publish. And one of the main things we do at these meetings is we always need to talk about photographs, because it's very important that we have an exclusive image of our royal subject on the front cover, because we have a treatment that we do every time, which is a plain white cover with gold embossed masthead and then a lovely portrait. And when we were chatting to our queen, Camilla,
yeah,
she said, oh, yes, I've thought about this. And I'm thinking about asking Catherine to take the cover shot. And Mark and I looked at each other and we thought, trying to think of a famous photographer called Catherine. And
yeah.
Tom, her son, was looking a little quizzical as well. And then she said, yes, Catherine Wales, you know, she likes taking photographs. We think that, you know, she would be a great candidate for the job. And Mark and I said, oh, yes, I think we could work with that. So we then had this, I mean, these projects are very sort of secretive anyway, but this was very cloak and dagger. You know, we weren't allowed to say that our now Princess of Wales was going to take the cover image. And as it went on, I then got a call from Buckingham Palace, the press office, and they said, in 20 minutes, the Duchess of Cambridge, as she was then, is going to call you on your mobile. And I sort of had to swallow very hard because I was actually at the hairdresser's at that point, which I'm fond of doing, working in the hairdresser's with my laptop.
Yeah, yeah.
I had foils in my hair and I thought, right, okay, Paula, you're just going to have to...
style this one out.
Style this one out, exactly. And I said to my hairdresser, because obviously I couldn't say, you know, the now Princess of Wales is going to call me in a minute. I said...
I mean, because, yeah, that would be a crazy thing to say anywhere, let alone the hairdressers. They'd probably think, yeah,
well, they
police.
Probably... They wouldn't believe you, would they, really?
Yeah. You'd be in an ambulance in no time. Yeah.
So I said, look, is there a quiet room? I've got an important call coming through in a minute. Is there a quiet room that I can go to? She said, yes, you can just nip upstairs. So sure enough, my phone rings. I ran up the stairs and tried not to sound too out of breath. She said, hello, Paula. It's the Duchess of Cambridge here. I would just like to talk to you about the cover shoot that I'm going to do with the then Duchess of Cornwall. I'm very nervous about it. How, you know, please can you tell me what you would like? And she was so nice and so lovely and so down to earth. So we had a very good chat about the fact that we needed a sort of, you know, almost informal shot, nothing too stuffy. And we needed an upright shot. Anyway, I spoke to her, I suppose, in a way that I would speak to any of our contributors. And so off she went and they did a closed private shoot. So it was just our queen, Camilla, and Catherine. And at Camilla's house in Wiltshire, her private home. And then a few days later, she actually filed her images to me via WeTransfer.
Mm-hmm.
And they were so good. There was a sort of selection of about 14 images that we really struggled to whittle it down to three, which we then presented to Camilla at our final meeting at Clarence House, which was even more stressy than usual because it was being filmed for an ITV documentary called Camilla's Country Life.
Mm-hmm.
And as it turned out, and this is really rather lovely, the King happened to be in the building at the same time, and
yeah,
a message came through to say, could he come in to say hello to Mark and Paula and to have a look at the final page proofs? And so, yeah, in he came and she showed him what she'd done and you could see with great pride. And he was absolutely thrilled to see all the articles. And he actually chose, she had sort of selected her favourite of these images and she got him to give it the final sign off. And the other wonderful thing about this is that not only did she outsell him,
yeah,
it wasn't just by a few hundred copies, it was by thousands. And I am extremely proud to have been part of her great achievement. Fair play to her. She totally smashed it.
Do you think his surprise visit was not such a surprise? Do you think he was worried about the competition and was coming to sort of have a check?
I get the feeling that there's quite a sort of friendly, rivalry between them. And after the issue was published, I did get quite a few messages from her private secretary asking for updates. And it took a while for the numbers to come through. And let's just say she was extremely happy when she heard how well it had done.
As she should be, as she should be. We don't have a huge amount of time left, Paula, but I do just want to ask you a couple more questions, if that's okay.
Of course.
You mentioned earlier that the sort of features team at Country Life is three women. Obviously, Camilla's guest edit was very successful, also done by a woman. In a sort of space that's considered, I would say, more male-dominated than female, how does it, you know, how is it for you to be a sort of success in this space, whether that's just in field sports in general or countryside journalism? How important is it that, you know, we have the Queen editing the magazine and we have, you know, three women on the features desk who are absolutely smashing the lights out at one of Britain's more successful magazines?
Oh, I think it's absolutely vital. And I'm fascinated by this, to be honest, because I am a gamekeeper's daughter who grew up in the middle of the countryside in Devon and was a very shy girl at school who loved reading, loved English, loved art. I was quite sporty, but I suppose I was also considered quite nerdy. And I never ever thought that I would end up with a job like this. But here we are, and women are so capable. I would say from my upbringing, again, that was a sort of very male orientated background, and it's something that I've had to, I guess, fight against from the days when I started as a junior reporter. I was a crime reporter on a local newspaper in Devon called the Sidmouth Herald. I've certainly done my time. I've covered council meetings. I've reported from court. I've taken photographs. I've worked in the dark room. But along the way, I have been fortunate to have been taught by so many great people who I guess didn't have a prejudice, who recognised that here was someone who loved talking to people, was very careful in her work, and was prepared to work hard. And that's why now I try to return that favour, if you like, by encouraging the women that I work with to go further every day and to believe that yes, they can achieve things that maybe they thought they never could. And certainly through this job, we all get the chance to either speak about our work on podcasts such as this. I mean, I recently did one with women who work in field sports. Our deputy features editor Victoria yesterday spoke on Times Radio about a brilliant article that she had written about regional sayings and words.
Yeah.
And I think before she did that, she was apprehensive, but she was brilliant. She was absolutely fantastic because she wrote that article and she knew exactly what to say. And she's as sharp as a tack. You know, why wouldn't she be? They loved it. And when her article was published on the Times website yesterday, hundreds and hundreds of readers commented on how good it is because she's a clever girl and she's more than capable. So I would say to any young women who are listening to this, please don't ever stop believing in your dreams. Don't think that if you are a quiet person that you might not be able to do a public role, because you can. Because believe me, even if you're nervous and you're anxious before you talk to people, which I still am, I'm 50, I've been doing this job for 30 years. If you believe in yourself, you can do anything. And also, I totally believe in the sort of Gareth Southgate school of management, in that if you encourage people and build on their wins, and you have a positive mental attitude, actually, that's one of the great things about being the managing editor on this famous magazine, is that there's about 20 of us who work so closely together, who believe in each other, who have each other's back. And so between us, we can achieve great things, and we do that every single day.
Perfect. I totally agree. And I think that's a fantastic spot to end. So thank you very much, Paula, for coming on. It was great to talk to you.
Thank you, James. It's always a pleasure to talk to you. And say thank you for always supporting us as well, because, what do they say? Teamwork makes dream work.
It does indeed. It does indeed. So thanks again. Thank you to the listeners, as always, for tuning in. Thank you, as ever, to Toby, my producer and editor. And I hope to hear from you all next week. Thank you very much.